Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And the name is...
The fourth name is Bud Carson, legendary figure in pro football. And I told you this week, each person said, player or coach, was going to have an Eagles and Browns connection. Three of them played or coached for both the Eagles and Browns. One of them happened to score three touchdowns against the Browns while playing for the Eagles. Bud Carson was an incredible defensive coordinator, but you may not remember, but was also the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. All right, call the contest line. First person to say the four names that were said this week. You got to go four for four. 215-988-1258. You'll win tickets, courtesy of NovaCare Rehabilitation, to the Eagles-Browns game on Sunday. All right, let's talk to the coach, Dick Vermeil. He joins us every Friday at this time in the pro football season. He is brought to us by Independence Blue Cross. The region's strongest network of doctors and hospitals means you can choose where, when, and how you get the care you need. Learn more at IBX.com. Good morning, Coach Vermeil.
Good morning.
Wonderful to have you on the show. To say the least, John, I think we're looking forward to talking some football, right?
Oh, yeah.
Given the
getting back on the right track.
The disaster of the Phillies from two nights ago. Dick, before we get to the Eagles, let me throw one Phillies-oriented question at you, and then we'll transition to the Eagles. So, you know, you obviously made the playoffs an awful lot in your tenure with all three organizations, and you won it all, you know, of course, with St. Louis, but you lost a few times in the playoffs. What is the manager of the Phillies going through? What are the players of the Phillies going through? What is it like to be pretty close to winning a championship and then have things crash down? What are they experiencing right now?
I think first you go through organizational depression, okay? From the owner on down, everybody is depressed. And gradually you start recognizing and appreciating the fact that you did a lot better than most teams. You got there, you know. So, and then you go into the evaluation process. How can we get back to where we were and then win it all? And, you know, you've got to be really honest with yourself in those kinds of evaluations. Was it my mistake as head coaches? Was it personnel over-evaluating somebody or things like this? Did we let somebody go that we should have kept that really was a positive influence in the locker room that helped us in the tough situation? All these things. But overall, the number one thing is organizational depression.
Yeah. Coach, how worried should we be as Phillies fans that the Phillies, like the last 3 years, 2022, we were in the World Series. Last year, the Championship Series. This year, no, we played four games. It's getting worse. We're playing less. It feels like we're farther from our goal, Coach.
Well, I think number one, appreciation is a good term. Appreciate the fact that they got there. You know how many cities didn't even get there? You know,
yeah.
Which, you know, our expectations, both Phillies and Eagles, are so high in this community because in the offseason, sometimes we overestimate how good we're going to be. And then when teams don't meet the expectations, there's a gradually deceleration in attitude toward the team. But when you get off as far as they got and lose, you got to respect the fact that they got there. And then I'm sure the organization, especially the Phillies, the way they work and the money they spend, they'll be back in that same situation next year, and they will have tried to improve on the reasons that they lost. You know, so everybody is striving to do the same thing. So, it's so competitive. And there's so many little variables that make a difference in winning and losing. And sometimes the variables are in your corner, and sometimes they go against you.
Dick Vermeil with us, as he is every Friday at this time. All right, Coach, let's talk some football here with the Eagles. So here's my mindset, and tell me if this is a reasonable approach as it relates to the Eagles and Browns. So I know that your former guy, and you love him, Herm Edwards, famously said you play to win the game, and that is an objective. But you also ultimately play to win the championship. You play to win it all.
Right.
You know, my mindset as it relates to the Eagles and Browns is I don't want to see the Eagles just win the game. I want to see them really handle the Cleveland Browns. I want to see a football team that convinces me that we actually may have an elite team this year instead of just another in a long list of excuse me wins that they've basically been getting for the last year. Is that a reasonable way to look at this game for championship aspirations, that they gotta take care of a bad football team?
No. Oh, gosh, guys, you look at this game as the most important game you're playing all year. You've got to, one game at a time. You know, everybody in all cities talk about playoffs way too early. You know, and just just got to focus, and you've got to appreciate the fact that you won the game, or you have to evaluate why you lost and move on.
But, Dick, wouldn't it be a bad – let me put it this way. If they win by 3 points, wouldn't that concern you? I mean, they're playing maybe the worst team in pro football. If they win by three, I'm like, what is that?
I know. You know, this guy at Cleveland was coach of the year last year, okay? That team could all of a sudden start playing better, especially Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, they're talented.
They have a very good pass rush, you know. They're up there number six in pass rush percentage in terms of sacks. You know, so their defense will give us some problems. You just hope our defense can keep Deshaun Watson playing as poorly as he has been playing. You know, last year was Flacco. You know, Flacco right now leads the league in quarterback efficiency rating. Okay. Maybe they'd be a better team with Flacco, but they didn't think so because they invested the money in a different direction.
Coach, how different do you expect the Eagles to look after the bye? And what do you think offensively in particular will stick out to us as fans that really, you know, looks different?
I expect them to be more like they were when they played New Orleans. Don't forget, the defense took apart an offense that had scored 91 points in two games. Okay? It doesn't take long for us to forget that because we played poorly. And the other thing is, I have found in my career, and I always worried about this, been playing other teams as a coach, when you're going to play a team that has played poorly but has played well before, the fact that they played poorly is a motivating force to the team that played poorly. And it's a demotivating situation for the team that's evaluating them when they did play for me. So I expect Cleveland to play better. I expect us to play like we did against New Orleans. You know, Vic Fangio's got way too much experience and too many great wins as the defensive coordinator to allow him to play that way 2 weeks in a row.
How much do we need to run the football moving forward? Our identity, do you know what our identity is offensively yet, Coach?
Well, right now, you know, an average for us was number five in the league, so we can run the football. We can,
okay.
With our offensive line, we can run the football. But I still believe in the balanced approach. I believe a little bit more play-action passing than we use here out of the shotgun. I mean, it was demonstrated last night. 49ers are way up there in offense, and passing offense, too. But it's play-action. Play action. Their yards per pass attempt, I think, is number one in the NFL. But I think our football team is going to play better. Will it be good enough to win? They'll have to do that on Sunday to prove it.
Dick, what do you got as far as an outcome of this game? We love getting your prediction. What are you thinking?
My computer says they're going to win by three. Now, I went back and looked what the computer said about the last few games with Cleveland. They were right three out of the five games played. And when they were right with Cleveland is they predicted them to lose. Okay. So Cleveland is predicted to lose. The Eagles are predicted to win them, and Cleveland has matched that. They have done what the computer said they were going to do in the game so far this year. When they were said when they were picked to lose, they lost. Okay.
Well, Coach, enjoy it this week. I think I speak for all of us when I say we need an Eagles win after what happened with the Phillies. Holy mackerel.
Can I add one thing?
Please do.
Talking about Bud Carson.
Yeah.
But many people don't know this, but he came with me to the Rams in 1997.
Wow.
He was my defensive coordinator. And then the second year, he became ill and he couldn't come back. Then that's when I moved John Bunning and Peter Junta to the coordinator job. But Bud Carson was truly a Hall of Fame assistant football coach, a great football coach.
Yeah.
Okay? Not just a good one, a great one.
Yeah, just a legendary figure in pro football. Coach, we love having you on the show. And a reminder to everyone listening, great news, if you live in Pennsylvania or New Jersey, you can now get delicious Vermeil wine shipped directly to your home. Visit VermeilWines.com for Coach's entire wine selection. Coach, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much.
I look forward to it. Thank you, guys. Great job.
Thanks, Coach.
Our pleasure. Coach Dick Vermeil. All right, well, good morning to you. I know it's still not a good morning because, you know, look, it's only been about 36 hours, so it still stinks. And I do wonder where people are in that anger to sadness, you know, thing, because, you know, obviously it has clearly set in that, you know, playoffs roll on and it's without the Phils, and they really blew a chance. They really did. You know, we got two different Twitter poll questions of the day about the Phils. They're both brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Armin has the 2025 Chevy Trax in stock now, starting at only $21,495. Together, let's drive. See Armin's inventory at ArminChevy.com. First poll question, which of these players do you think is most likely to not be a Philly next year? Is it A, Bohm, B, Castellanos, or C, Stott? Not be a Philly, most likely. Who do you got? And the second poll question, of these two, who would you rather have on the Phillies next year? So this is your preference to keep. Is it Bohm or Castellanos? You can vote at Sports Radio WIP on Twitter. We'll talk to Elliot in about 15 minutes, getting ready for the Eagles and the Browns. James, a question for you as we get ready for the debut of the Flyers tonight, which means Mishkov's debut for the Flyers. True or false, James? Tonight, an athlete debuts in Philadelphia sports who will be the best player in Philadelphia sports in the next 10 years.
Wow, that is a great question, Joe.
I mean, if he's as good as they say,
no,
isn't
no,
the
that's
answer
why I'm
likely
stopping,
yes?
But yeah, I think it has to be yes, right?
I mean, you got another like 5 or 6 years of Bryce, and he's phenomenal, and he's still in his prime. And Wheeler's still in his prime.
But no, if this kid's as good as he's supposed to be, yeah. No, I mean, yeah. He's supposed to be one of the best players in hockey. So, yeah, I think there's a real chance that happens.
I'm very excited to watch him. I mean, we'll see how long, you know, people stay up tonight. It's like a 10 or 10:30 game, which is ridiculous. But I'm really excited to see this guy. I mean, best prospect since Lindros for the Flyers. Go get it, man. Go lead our town. 215-592-94.
I just want to see him look different than other.
Oh, he'll
players.
Look different.
I want to see him look, look faster and you know, like just like craftier. Yeah.
I mean, he already won an overtime preseason game for them. So like he's already standing out. So
and there's been such a lack of skill over the last five or six years. Come on.
I think just the energy around the team that he'll bring too will be really helpful.
It's important. It's very, very important.
Gotta hope.
All right, let's go to the phones. A lot on the Phils. Let's go to Levert in Erie. Levert, hey. You're on WIP.
Hey, how's it going?
I mean, I'm frustrated, Levert. I'm frustrated.
Yeah, I was listening to you earlier, and you were talking about the horses. And
talk about Hammer Time?
It's Hammer Time.
I mean, that guy's got to be – the owner of that horse has to be a WIP listener, right? Has
MC
to be.
Hammer actually did used to own racehorses.
Ooh.
I'm not sure if he still owns them, but yeah. He was in the game.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that horse is named Hammer Time.
Well,
after
there's
MC
a lot
Hammer.
Of people who say Hammer Time or refer to Hammer Time that have no idea that you
but locally
call yourself Hammer.
Well, they call me that. Yeah. I mean, other people call me it. You know, and then I just
but
say,
you
who
call
are those other people?
The millions of listeners. You know, I say, okay, millions of listeners. You want to call me Hammer, then we have a segment called Pete the Hammer.
But it's kind of like if I call myself John and then I go on the radio and say, I'm John. I would expect that people would say, you're John. That's what you did
you're
Hammer, right?
You're unbelievable, man. All I'm saying, Levert, is to me it's not a coincidence that horse at Delaware Park raced and won. I think the owner must be a WIP. That's
so I just looked up the owner. The owner is Eagle Up and London Reed, whatever that means. It must be some sort of like conglomerate.
Do owners
or something.
Have special
the
names
owner
too?
Is Eagle Up.
What? Eagle Up is one of the two owners.
Surprise,
I guess that's
it's not
the
Eagle,
or something.
Eagle Fang from the Karate Kid.
I would
thing.
Say Eagle Up is definitely.
All right, Levert. Thanks, buddy.
A fan of. The Eagles.
Birds?
You would
go
you
birds.
Would have to imagine.
He's a Philadelphia well, look, he's a Philly sports fan. Let's go to Mike and Del Ran. Mike, you're on WIP.
What's up, guys?
Hey, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
I'm in a dark place, man. Thought I'd get over it, but I'm still there.
Well, wait till we play the audio of Alec Bohm we're about to play in a moment, and you'll be in a darker spot.
It feels dark. It's not a good spot, and it is nice to be able to sort of lean into one another on this one because I don't feel pleased. I don't feel happy. I'm mad more than anything, and I feel like it's unhealthy the way I'm mad. I feel like I really do need to, like, vent somehow.
Real quick, and then I'll hop off, right? In 2017 – question got asked tons of times, would you take 10 years of losing sports in your city for an Eagle Super Bowl? And we all, without hesitation, said yes. And I'm looking back at all the things that's happened with, like, the Sixers, the Eagles with Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson, making it just so close but not getting there. And I watch what these Phillies have done in the last 3 years, and I'm convinced that the devil has collected on that.
We got
three more years of this, man. Think about it. Think about it. I'm 43 years old, guys. I've seen three championships in my city. I live in a major market. If you lived in San Antonio, who has one team, you got five.
I know. And you got the guy that's going to be the best player in the NBA for the next 10 years.
Yeah, you do. He is. Yep.
If the Cleveland Browns somehow beat these Eagles, I'm going to probably throw myself off the bridge. Go Birds.
All right, Mike. Appreciate the call. Well, hang in there
that
as
was
best
a
you can.
Would you do it again? Knowing the last eight years, if it were a result, I mean, without a doubt, you would take the Eagles Super Bowl when you have
James,
to.
James, here's the irony to his call. The concept was always you take teams that are terrible. We don't have terrible teams.
No, you're right.
We have three quality teams. Well, the Eagles, I don't know if they're quality, but generally the last bunch of years we've had three really good teams. And the problem is it's the you get close to the top of the hill and you get
the
knocked
almost.
Back down. Yeah, it's the almost. I mean, it's brutal. John, are you going to put together a sad song for us next week to sum up our Phillies feeling? Because I think the people might need it.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what a sad song is?
Something balladic.
Hallelujah.
That is a sad song.
Yeah, I can't say that word either.
But wouldn't you rather have like
it's
a good team and
uh-oh. Yeah. You know that song?
Oh, no, I don't.
Yes, you do.
You know it. John, it's in the last episode of The West Wing Season 3.
Yeah, it's like Jeff Beck or something like that, right?
That is not the reference I would have given, but yeah. It's in Shrek.
All right. I know exactly the song you're talking about. All right, here's the thing that's going to make people feel even worse. This Alec Boehm audio we got to play again. So he had an answer after the game that is so positively mind-numbing about his approach to the plate. Just listen, and then we'll assess. This could be his ticket out of town. And I'm the guy saying keep Boehm, but this is really not good. Here's Boehm after the game about his approach at the plate.
When I swing at the first pitch, I usually put it in play and hit it. I don't foul it off. I don't swing and miss. So the at-bat ends right there, and then I don't get a hit. And, he's swinging at the first pitch. He needs to see pitches. But I'm up there. I'm an aggressive hitter. I'm not going to change who I am. That's how I've been my whole career. That's what's got me here. And if they throw the ball over the plate, I'm ready to hit it. And I'm not going to think too much about all that other stuff and just go up there. And every time I stand there with the bat on my shoulder and see a pitch, it's right down the middle. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword.
John, that's
all
so
right. Well, what about if you have to do something that betters your team's chance of winning? If you force that pitcher to throw more pitches, it helps your team.
You know what
that
stood out to me on the second listen of that? That's what's gotten me here. Gotten you where? Knocked out in the NLDS by the Mets? Like, that's where it's gotten you. You're
four
a loser.
Games.
That's where it's
four
gotten
games
you.
This year?
Four so
it's games
clearly
is
not
all we could muster
places.
As a team in the postseason?
Yeah, I'd also say, and look, I don't want to put him, because this wouldn't be fair, in the Ben Simmons category, but it rings a certain... I think he's saying, by getting me here, he's saying I'm a Major League Baseball player.
Yeah, the majors, and he's going to make money and all that.
Yeah, all that.
So it's not deaf. What you should say after a loss.
It's not how you should think. It's not how you should think. I mean, Ruben... I understand, you know, there's some ego with athletes and there's some belief in yourself. But, I mean, Ruben, we just had a player who failed dramatically in the postseason, in part because of his approach. Say, quote, I'm not going to change who I am. Ruben, that's horrendous.
I think that there's some of those things that were said were sort of out of context in this way. The guy has had a lot of success on the first pitch of the at-bat in his career. He's a 324 hitter. This season, he was a 324 hitter on the first pitch of an at-bat. So that part of it, I think, is what he was sort of stressing, that I don't think that he was making good decisions on it's the quality of the first pitch. It's really about that. If it's a good quality pitch to hit, then hit it and have a hack at it. But what I saw over the course of this last several months was those first pitches were not the kind of pitch that he should be swinging at because he wasn't making consistent barrel contact with it. So there's some contextual part. There's a context in that. Yes, he should stay aggressive on the first pitch if it's a good quality pitch to hit. And I think that's probably what he was stating, and I think we're sort of taking it a little bit too far.
But doesn't this sound as though he is deluding himself, Ruben? Like, to some degree, this feels like denial
where it's, you know, the season's over. We're asking you a question about your approach. Is he trying to defend it? When he says, I'm not going to change who I am, is he suggesting that it was good enough?
I don't know that he's suggesting. What I do feel is that, like, he's had success doing something a certain way, and he does not want to deviate that from that necessarily, because he's had success in that approach. I don't know if that's right or wrong. I don't know that it's something that he may want to retract or how he thought about it, but I think that we may be taking it maybe a little bit too far.
All right, so let's dissect another comment that was said after the game. And by the way, Elliot Shore Parks joins us in about 5 minutes here as the Eagles get ready to play the Browns. So, James, let's play the audio of Trey Turner. So, Ruben, we played this yesterday on our show. I want to play it for you and get your reaction. I did not like this answer one iota either. This is Trey after the game. I thought there was some truth in this, clearly, but a lot of ridiculousness as well. Here's Trey 2 nights ago.
I personally think we get ourselves out. I don't think it matters who's on the mound. I know I feel that way personally, and I would think a lot of guys in this room feel that way as well. Hitting's very tough, and it's, you know, easy to sit in the dugout and say, don't swing at this pitch, or, you know, do this or do that. And, you know, we say it all the time. It's so easy from over here when we're in the dugout and someone else is hitting, we say it. But when you're in the box and you're competing, and there's a guy, you know, on the other side throwing 95 miles an hour and got all sorts of things going on, it's easy to say, do this or do that. But when you're in the box, you got to make a decision and how you're going to compete, and I think we want to compete. I think we have a great lineup and great offensive players, and I think we get ourselves up.
All right, Ruben, here's my problem with that whole thing. I'll translate it this way. What he just said is, we know what to do. When we get in the batter's box, we don't do it. I mean, that's what he just said. What is that?
I think he's acknowledging the fact that they made terrible swing decisions, and I think that that's the truth.
He is acknowledging that they made, and
yes, they do have very good offensive players, but they made bad swing decisions. Some guys I don't know the answer why. I don't know everybody's approach. I don't sit in the batting cage with Kevin Long and the rest of the guys and their assistant hitting guys. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're trying to work on a daily basis. But what I do know is their swing decisions were not good, and he acknowledged that. So, I applaud him for saying, you know what, we got ourselves out, because that's exactly what they did.
So, no, does this mean that Kevin Long, the coach who taught them this approach, should be fired?
I don't think that he taught them this approach. I guarantee you, if you ask Kevin Long, I guarantee you he's telling them to swing at strikes.
Yeah.
Ruben, not swinging at strikes, I mean,
they're not responding.
You can't physically take the bat and take it to the plate
but
for them.
Can I ask you a question about Kevin Long, Ruben? Because Fritz was talking about this yesterday. I thought it was a really interesting point that Kevin Long is much more of an old school fastball first type guy, and that there's a possibility the game has changed, has kind of passed him by a little bit with the game being about spin now and not throwing, you know, a 2-0 fastball. They'll throw curveballs. They'll throw splitters in those spots and all that stuff. Is it possible that Kevin Long's philosophy doesn't match where the game is as much as it used to?
Listen, I don't know what his philosophy is, because I...
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't sit there and talk to him about hitting every day. That's not what I do. I'm more of an observer than anything else. I do know that there are a ton of players in this league who think that Kevin Long is the best hitting coach they've ever been around. I've talked to Chris Young about it. I've talked to a bunch of guys when I was at MLB Network. They love him.
Well, then blame the players. I mean, Ruben, here's the
guys,
thing.
Guys, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
You have to perform. It's about the players. It's not about the coaches. If you don't perform... then you just don't perform. I mean, the players have are the ones who are actually playing.
The players who don't perform get their managers fired.
That's correct.
They do.
That is correct.
I mean, they just do.
So everybody becomes – you can't trade the whole team.
No, yeah. You can't.
So should we be worried that we're getting – we are potentially getting worse because someone's head is on the line. Like, someone will be fired. Multiple people will probably be fired after these losses. I would expect Kevin Long's going to be at the top of that list. Is that a mistake?
I don't have any idea what they're going to do. I think that there will be changes. I don't have any idea what those changes will be, but I guarantee you that Dave Dombrowski and John Middleton will not sit pat and not do anything, right? Because they know that changes need to be made. I don't know what those changes are going to be, but the bottom line is this. The game is a game of adjustments, and if you do not adjust, then you will get worse. Yeah. The train will pass you by, and the boys have to make an adjustment, a mental shift in the way they approach, because the approach that they have, we've seen it, they've been exploited a couple of times now. They have to make an adjustment. I think that they have the ability to do that. Some of them do, some of them don't. And I think that that will happen at some point.
Look, Elliot, in just a moment, I'll just say this. The biggest thing that bothered me the other day with Game 4, I mean, other than that they lost, I just need those players in the moment to know this guy's not throwing a strike. Don't swing! I mean, I don't understand. I mean, I know it's not easy to see a 97-mile-an-hour fastball and then an 87-mile-an-hour breaking ball and discern the difference in a nanosecond. I'm not saying that's easy. I'm not saying I could do it. Here's what I would have known to do. I'm up in the count 2-0. This guy's really shaky. He may actually be, quote, intentionally shaky, throwing the ball for balls intentionally. I'm taking a pitch. I'm just taking a pitch.
This is what I meant about swing decisions, Joe. They were deciding long before the ball was released that they were swinging.
Correct.
Which is an approach that needs to change. And I think that's part of the guessing culture of what baseball has become. I believe that if you're a really good hitter, you see it and you hit it. And you have to see it first, and you do not make your decision to swing until you see the baseball and make sure it's a pitch that's a hittable pitch.
Totally. All right, let's talk more, but let's flip it back to the Eagles. They've got a game coming up tomorrow. By the way, before we get to Elliot, James, I want to play the audio of Jaws when he was with us earlier this week. James, it's the third of the various Jaws pieces of audio we have. Jaws 3, to take everyone inside how we have our little number system. So he talked about Jaws with us earlier this week, what he wants to see different from the Eagles' offense after the bye. Here's Jaws a couple days ago with us.
The offense from training camp seemed like it was going to be reimagined, and week one it appeared to be different. And then, now I know AJ and Devontae were out, maybe that's it. Or maybe Jalen's just more comfortable doing what he's used to and not what they wanted him to implement this year. Could you figure out why weeks 3 and 4 it looked similar to last year when it was supposed to be different?
Probably the competition. But if there's one thing that I would recommend they do, it's just my feeling, my evaluation of this team, my evaluation of where the game is right now, more under center play for Jalen Hurts. I am just a big believer in plays under center. It gives a different illusion to the defense of what you're going to do. I think it's better when you have a Saquon Barkley in the back of, you know, when he's running without the ball in his hands. When I say that, you know, when you're in the shotgun, the running back literally has to stand there, and the quarterback has to come back and give him the football, and then he starts to run when you're in the shotgun. When you're under center, the running back's already going downhill. He's got momentum already started. And I think Saquon is a great one-cut running back. Find that break and hit it. But when you're in the shotgun, you're back there, and things develop a lot more slowly. That's how I would like to see more under center, and you have a better play-action passing game when you're under center as well. You have more options that are available to you. So I would like to see more under center offense from the quarterback.
All right, let's talk to our Eagles reporter, Elliot Shore Parks, always on the beat, doing a great job. Elliot, good morning. Is it going to look different?
Well, it'll look better because A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith and Lane.
Oh, that's a given, right?
Yeah,
we
know
that.
So that's part of it.
Yeah,
I mean, look, to Jaw's point, and as always, I think it's a great point by him. I do think that this offense, in certain ways, would benefit from getting under center more. But I don't think that this offense is in need of any kind of major change. If you look at what they are this season, even with missing AJ without three games, they're fifth in yards per drive and they're fourth in plays per drive. So they're moving the ball. The issue isn't that the offense can't get going. The issue is the offense is stopping when the ball is turned over and when they get in the red zone. So I do think that being under center more, certainly it would help, but their issue is not, in my opinion, the style of the offense. It's the turnovers.
Huh. All right, so what do you think will be different? Just more of the same, hopefully less turnovers? I can't imagine it'll just be status quo. I do think they're revamping things with the bye, and it will be an improvement. Don't you agree?
Well, maybe. But, I mean, the offense has kind of looked the way it's looked ever since Jalen has been the quarterback. The main difference has always just been when AJ plays, they're way better, right? And
totally.
I know it sounds simplistic, but we've been through multiple coordinators, you know, different types of offensive tweaks that they're going to do, and it mostly always looks the same. So,
I don't know. I thought it looked a lot different when he was in the Super Bowl leading our team efficiently. Like, it did feel like it was more.
The key word there, right? The key word was efficiency.
Yeah.
I think that we get so focused, and I'm not trying to completely diminish it, but like on how, you know, how much pre-snap motion they're doing, how much he's under center. The issue, even last year, was never moving the ball. Like, that wasn't the issue.
The issue is what you're saying, Elliot, is the issue is Jalen Hurts, right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah, the issue is the turnovers. Like, that's the problem, right? I don't think being under center more is going to cause Jalen to turn it over less.
Okay. Elliot, let's talk about Hurts and Sirianni. It was an interesting series of answers this week from Jalen Hurts about the bye week and him and Sirianni. For those that missed it, can you just detail some of what Jalen said, and do you agree there should be a sense of optimism that perhaps these guys are on a better page than they had been?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is probably the best answer Jalen Hurts has given about his relationship with Sirianni, maybe since, you know, we were in Arizona for the Super Bowl and they would talk about each other there. But, yeah, so earlier this week, Jalen Hurts spoke at his normal, weekly press conference and said that he and Sirianni met, it sounds like a few times during the bye week. He talked about how it was good to be in harmony with Nick Sirianni. He said that they're two leaders of the team. They know together. Like, they have to work together, and it's important. So it was a very encouraging answer. He said, you know, he was kind of lucky to have Nick Sirianni as his head coach, to paraphrase. So it just was a very different tone, I think, than we've heard Jalen talk about Nick in the past. And I think it's very encouraging because, like, ultimately these two have to be on the same page. We can pretend like it doesn't matter if the head coach and quarterback don't get along or are on the same page, but it does matter. So hearing, like, they had to sit down, and Sirianni talks today, so I'm excited to hear more about it. But I think it is a very encouraging sign.
That's wonderful. That offense sounds like they're on the right track. The defensive side, is it going to be negatively impacted by the Devin White fiasco, or how is that sitting, Elliot?
Yeah, so, I mean, well, initially the defense won't be impacted because he wasn't even dressing
no
the game.
I don't think
they're going to miss him there. But where they could miss him is their linebacker depth is somewhat young and unproven. I mean, their top backup linebacker right now is Jeremiah Trotter Jr. And I know N'Kobe Dean won the job out of training camp, and Zach Bond has certainly had his moments. But the linebacker play overall has not been at a level where you can say it's like unquestioned that one of them could lose the job. So it's pretty clear Vic Fangio is never going to play Devin White. So ultimately, I don't think it matters they released him. Their linebacker core is certainly not proven or anything like that.
Wow. Was there something that occurred that was a breaking point, or was it just,
With
Devin White?
Well, Elliot, they did arrive at some sort of financial agreement, correct, that gives the Eagles cap relief that otherwise they would not have had if they carried him?
That's a big deal.
Yeah, there was some kind of what was the nature of that? Because it seemed like they were just going to sock him away until he finally agreed. And I don't blame the Eagles. By the way, I applaud the Eagles for taking a hard line. What do you know about what went on behind the scenes?
So they gave Devin White, when they signed him, about $3.5 million guaranteed, which is, you know, not a huge number when you look at the overall size of the cap, but it's a decent amount of guaranteed money, especially when you sign somebody early on in free agency. So after handing out that check, I would imagine that was part of the reason they wanted to try to hold on to him. You know, again, if N'Kobe gets hurt, you know, maybe Vic could be convinced to play him. But now that he's been released, You know, his base salary was right around $2 million, $2.5 million. I would imagine the agreement they came to is there's offsetting language in there now, where if Devin White signs with another team, you know, the Eagles kind of recoup some of that money. So I think they'll get a small type of financial benefit from this, but nothing that will significantly like benefit the cap.
Are there any injuries that are limiting us after the long break, or are we pretty good to go?
No, they're completely good to go. Everybody on the roster was a full participant in practice both days so far this week. N'Kobe Dean.
N'Kobe limited, yeah.
Well, he was listed as limited. Talking to him to locker room, it sounds like, well, he's definitely going to play, but it also sounds like he partook in quite a bit of practice. So
great.
Not really sure what's going on there. But, yeah, they're completely healthy heading into this game. So,
and, Elliot, do you expect Cooper DeJean to get the start over Maddox?
I do, yeah. I think that's the route they're going to go. And good. I think it's time. You know, Maddox, while I don't think he's been as terrible as everybody else does, I think you can certainly look for ways to improve the defense. And one is Maddox is not great against the run or tackling. And those are two areas I think Cooper could help him with.
And Sidney Brown, where do things stand with him getting out there? Is it too early to expect that?
So they do have an empty roster spot now with the Devin White release, and that could be another reason that they came to a conclusion to this now as opposed to, you know, waiting a little longer. So Sidney would need to be put on the 53, but it certainly seems like there's a good chance he'll be out there. They have the roster spot. He's practiced full both days these week. Both
great.
Days these week. I do think he will help them on special teams. So,
and it sounds like Fangio's a big fan, the way he speaks of Sidney Brown.
Yeah, he's even talked about the possibility of him maybe being like an in-the-box nickel corner, like linebacker piece. So I think there are ways they'll get creative.
All right, Elliot, last thing here. I'm going to throw a true-false at you. Tell me which is, if it's true or not. A two-point win by the Eagles against a really Browns team is not something that Eagles fans should want to take. Put it another way. Like, I'd rather the game be played than I find out today that the Eagles have already won the game by 2 points, because that'll tell me they're just not good enough this year, even though they got a W. Agree or disagree?
Oh, I fully 100% agree. That is true. I think this is a major style point game. Like, this is not about winning the game. Obviously, they have to win the game, and it would be a catastrophe if
correct.
They did it.
Yeah.
But if they don't go out there and win this game by 10-plus, 13-plus points, like, this can't be another game against the Atlanta Falcons or a game against the Saints. The Browns have legitimately the worst offense in the entire NFL. They are about to bench their quarterback and they're 1-4. And the Eagles are coming off a bye completely healthy. If they can't go out there and play clean football against this team, then, yeah, I definitely think that, you know, it'll be a concerning performance even if they win.
All right, Elliot, we'll talk to you next week, my man. Enjoy the game. We'll talk next week. Thanks, pal.
Yep, sounds good. Talk to you guys.
All right, so a lot on the Eagles, obviously most on the Phillies today, and a series of questions: how you feel, how angry you are, the sadness reality. Are you more angry than sad? Are you shocked? I'm not shocked, because baseball lends itself to this a lot, meaning upsets. And, I mean, guys, we can't obscure the reality, and Ruben pointed it out. The Mets were way better than the Phillies for 4 months, like way better. Now, it doesn't make me feel any better, but it is true. I mean, the Mets were way above 500, and the Phillies were an average team for 4 months. With that said, I am disgusted. And, of course, we're also trying to figure out where they should go from here, who to keep, who to get rid of. Drew in Westchester, as we broadcast from Borgata. What's going on, Drew?
Hi, folks. Yeah, I'll get right into it. I got a thought on the roster and then just a thought on Topper. So, obviously, there's part of my brain that is just like, you know, get rid of this guy, get rid of this guy, get rid of this guy, but I think you also have to think about, like, who has value to other teams. So that's why I think it's more likely to move on from Boehm than Castellanos. And, Joe, outside of you, I haven't heard anyone else. I didn't bring up name, but you brought up Ranger Suarez earlier. I know the narrative is, oh, he's a gamer. He's gutsy. I did not think he was good at all the other day. I told a Mets fan next to me, I'm petrified every time he throws a pitch.
Drew, I thought his start in a strange way really hurt them. I know in the end it's no earned runs, but he was so bad early, it necessitated. Like, you can't get Tanner Banks up in the bullpen in the second inning. You can't. Okay, the season's on the line. So you have to get up a Hoffman or a Strom. You have to. So you have to get up Hoffman. Then you have to get him up again. I give Ranger credit for hanging in there and gutting through it, and that is really admirable. But the inefficiency of his start had a dramatic negative impact on that game.
They knew they weren't getting more three or four out of him. That's why he had to have a plan, whether it was Sanchez or Wheeler.
No, I agree with that.
He
but
doesn't have to bring – Hoffman got the job done. Hoffman came in and got two huge outs. My point is, it was the decision to come back out. Like, that's on Topper, not on Ranger.
That's not what Drew's talking about. Drew's talking about what I referenced earlier. Should Ranger Suarez, who we all love, be trusted for next year – when he's never been a pitcher in the postseason, with three chances now, that either the organization believes in to go deep or can go deep? I mean, it is a factor. I mean, it's three times, and I love Ranger. Guys, you guys know.
But as a fourth starter, that's fine. Fourth starters don't usually go super deep in the playoff games. Hold on, James.
It may not be fine. I mean, when we're talking
I'm fine with Ranger as a fourth starter in the playoffs.
I did not expect 2 weeks ago to consider maybe they should move off of Ranger. But if we're talking about you got to shake some stuff up, he may be a shakeup. I mean, guys, you might be able to get a hell of an outfielder for Ranger Suarez. I mean, like, look, I know the easy thing is to just sign somebody because there's a free agent. John Middleton spends another $200 million. I get that, okay? But if this is also the creative move, the I'm going to trade my Mark Recchi for your John LeClair.
Are you thinking
and Eric
of it because they've got Wheeler, they've got Nola,
well,
Sanchez, and maybe Painter?
But Rangers only got one free agent
after this season. So, like, his value is not as high as if you trade him a couple years ago or whatever.
I understand.
I would not move Ranger Suarez and under any circumstances. You see how difficult it is to create depth in your rotation. He is a 1 year player. You're going to pay him 1 year. You let him pitch his rear end off because he's pitching for a contract, and then you decide what you want to do with the guy.
And you would not give him that contract now, Ruben?
I would not.
No.
Okay. Well, Drew, we'll see, my man. Appreciate the phone call. Let's go to Tyler. He's calling from Landenberg right now. Good morning, Tyler.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Good morning, Ruben. How you doing?
Good morning.
Wait. Why does Ruben get the special good morning?
Because I'm special. He said good morning. I'm special sometimes.
I'm a little offended by that. I'm a little offended.
Joe, you have a guest in your house. You greet the guest. You know, come on.
Yeah,
now
he's part of the show. He's a host of the show. I mean, they're not doing
that.
It's
cool, Tyler. You're all good, man.
All right, Tyler, go ahead, pal.
Hey, I want to make a Flyers comment real quick before I get into a baseball comment. Joe, do you understand the draft process with Michkov? Do you understand what happened or no?
Not really.
So what was it?
He wasn't going to come here, and that's how the Flyers got
correct,
him a little lower?
Correct, yes.
All right, so I do understand it. So there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to pump everyone up here and saying, like, they were talking about the Bedard and Michkov being the next Crosby and
sure.
Ovechkin. That's the type of player we're speaking about here. So, but anyways. So
can we pump the brakes, please?
Ruben, I'm so
can
nervous.
Can we just please pump the brakes?
But, Ruben, that's what they're saying. I mean,
no, who's they?
They are the hockey
the people
experts.
Who know
who's
the they?
Those in the know.
Can we pump the brakes, please, until the man drops the puck?
My baseball team just lost. I don't want to pump the brakes.
I want this kid to be the best player he can possibly be. Pump the brakes.
Nope, won't do it. The Russian.
Future star. The Soviet.
The Soviet, man.
We've been waiting 15 years to have a decent hockey team in this
He's going to be great.
We're hungry.
He's not the greatest yet.
He's going to be the best Flyer of all time. Mark it down.
My goodness.
And Tyler, I'll say this. I think they've only had one great player, and that's Giroux. And he wasn't even great, but he was, you know, great with a lowercase J. Only one in the last 15 years.
Great with a lower class.
He was.
That's a great way to put it, Joe, after Pronger,
the only great player was Giroux.
Pronger was here like a year?
About two or three, but he got injured.
He wasn't enough. He got injured.
He was great. He was
super talented.
He is the greatest defenseman I have seen the Flyers have.
Super talented.
Because the other two that I've seen the Flyers have
would
be Markel and Desjardins.
Yep, exactly.
And then Timoneau might be four. Okay. And there's other good
Pronger
ones.
Pronger was definitely better.
Pronger was totally the best defenseman I've ever seen the Flyers
super
have.
Super
intimidating.
Oh, he was
so
everything.
So big.
He controlled a game from the back. Yep. He controlled it. All right, Tyler.
For sure. Hey, my big question is, I mean, where are we on this?
Depressed.
Ruben, is the buy bad for baseball?
No, it's not.
Good question. Why not, Ruben?
It's not.
Hold on. I want to say something real quick as well. It's not just because the Phillies had to sit for 6 days, but also it gives an advantage to the other team getting off of a high of winning a series and coming And then
but it also gives you a chance to rest.
But that's not more valuable.
The other teams who had a bye are doing just fine. They're still playing baseball.
It is more valuable.
I'm just sick of using it as an excuse.
That's not the excuse.
I'm with you, Devin.
It's not the excuse. You can't play a one-game playoff. I don't like the one-game playoff.
Look, I think the simple thing is we don't know enough yet to truly know. We got to see this for 10 years. My antenna is up that it may be a disadvantage.
I truly know that in some cases it is a major advantage if you have a week to get better and you're hurt prior to the playoff.
In football.
Then take the wild card out completely. If you're worried about that, take it all out.
Ruben, you're correct.
I never wanted a second and third wild card. I was as crystal clear about that as could be. I thought it was ridiculous. You play 162 games, some team wins 86 and gets to compete for the World Series. It's participation trophy society for one reason. Because owners are pigs and they want more money in their pockets.
But it also allows teams like the Mets, who had a terrible start, who had a fantastic finish to the season, an opportunity to be in the playoffs and to show how good they are.
It allows more fans to be interested in the season for longer. Like, it is good for the overall health of the sport that more fans are paying attention and care.
I agree with you on
that. Joe, it's only bad when your team loses.
That's right. When it screws you. Our team is the Braves.
You didn't say that in 2022.
No, exactly.
Well, to be reasonable.
Am I wrong?
Joe
said it. Like, to be fair, Joe has said this from the jump. He said, I know it helped the Phillies, but I don't like it, to be fair.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.